Welcome to a very special edition of Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. I'm Jeff Basham. Outbeat Radio is a program for, about, and produced by members of the Sonoma County GLBT community. We air at 8 p.m. each and every Sunday here on KRCB. Tonight, I join two amazing transgender women in a conversation about growing up, discovering who they are, coming out, transitioning, and living their lives as who they were meant to be since birth. Joining me is Vanessa Argabright and Jacqueline Regina Nugent.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Argabright, and I am a transsexual woman. I began my transition from male to female in 2007. You're going to hear my observations, thoughts, and entries in my journal about how life affected me and how I felt my new woman self.
Hi, my name is Jacqueline Regina Nugent. I transitioned in 2004. I'm going to talk a lot about my life, why it took me so long to face it, and what the experience of transition has been.
Stay tuned for all of that and more right after the Outbeat Radio News with Outbeat team member Joel Bellagio.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, according to an article in 365gay.com, hundreds of gays, lesbians, transgender people, and their supporters danced through the streets of the capital of Nepal last week in the country's first international gay parade. The participants, dressed in colorful clothes, thronged to the main streets of Kathmandu, led by Sunil Pant, a member of Nepal's parliament and the nation's most prominent gay activist. Pant told reporters that the parade participants were from India, Japan, Britain, Germany, Denmark, and Norway, and a police officer at the scene estimated the crowd at around 2,000. Gay rights have improved dramatically in a country where just 5 years ago police were beating gays and transgendered people in the streets. Now Nepal is issuing third gender identification cards and appears set to enshrine gay rights and possibly same-sex marriage in their constitution. While in the United States, Ken Mellman, President Bush's campaign manager in 2004 and a former chairman of the Republican National Committee, has told family and associates that he is gay, according to an article in The Atlantic. And elsewhere, according to an article in the Salt Lake Tribune, Governor Gary Herbert has won the support of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Republicans in Utah. Herbert met Tuesday with leaders from not only the Utah Log Cabin Republicans, but also members of Equality Utah, the Utah Pride Center, and the Human Rights Campaign. However, Herbert did not discuss specific political issues that affect the LGBT community and took the opportunity to spend 5 minutes praising the support of his wife and noting their 40th wedding anniversary this year. And in California, clergy who refuse to sanction same-sex marriages would be protected under a bill sent to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's desk by the state Senate. Senator Mark Leno's bill, approved 22-11 last week, would become necessary if a federal appeals court upholds a judge's ruling this month, striking down Proposition 8, the state's voter-approved gay marriage ban. The bill says religious institutions from faiths that object to same-sex unions could not be stripped of their tax-exempt status if their clergy refused to perform weddings for gay couples. Leno defended the measure when it was opposed by Senator Roy Ashburn, an openly gay Republican from Bakersfield. Ashburn objected that the bill defined same-sex marriages as civil relationships, which he says puts them in a lesser class than heterosexual marriages. And in more state legal news, California will officially end a requirement that a state agency research the causes and cures for homosexuality under a bill approved by the state Senate. The bill, updating a 60-year-old law, was sent back to the Assembly for final action. The law passed in 1950 classifies gays as sexual deviants. It requires the Department of Mental Health to research the causes and potential cures for homosexuality. The bill, AB-2199, was carried by Senator Roy Ashburn, the Republican from Bakersfield, who revealed that he is gay earlier this year after he was cited for driving drunk while leaving a gay bar. The measure passed the Senate on a 36-0 vote without any debate. And on the religious front, a Presbyterian Church USA court has rebuked a pastor Friday for performing same-sex weddings, but at the same time praised her for her prophetic ministry and urged the church to change its dictates to be more accepting of gay unions. The Reverend Jane Adams Spar violated church rules by performing 16 same-sex marriages during the brief period in 2008 when such unions were legal in California. The decision found by a 4-2 vote that Spar was guilty of 3 counts of violating the National Church's Book of Order by performing same-sex ceremonies as marriages. However, the court unanimously tossed the 4th charge that alleged she failed to further the peace and unity and purity of the church. And right here in our own backyard, the Black Cat, the cozy little club in the heart of Pengrove, is closing its doors for good with a fun farewell party held on August 28th. The bar, whose original namesake featured prominently in California's early gay rights struggle, is reported to officially close in mid-September. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio.
Thank you, Joel. Welcome back to Outbeat Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Basham. Tonight, we have the pleasure of hearing the life stories of two women who have recently completed the process of transitioning from male to female. Earlier this month, I joined Vanessa Argabright and Jacqueline Regina Nugent as they talked with each other, discussing their childhood experience.
My earliest recollection of when I felt female or a liking for female things was probably maybe age 5 or so. And I remember seeing little girls' dresses and all the cute things that they got to wear. And I was stuck with shorts and ugly shirts and ugly shoes, really. I had told my mom a couple times that I really liked the other stuff. I loved the color pink. I liked all the light, you know, pretty colors. And she would say, no, that's not for you, and we would move on.
For me, it was not an issue for the first 6 or 7 years of my life. I just, you know, everybody said I was a boy, and I accepted it. And then around 6 or 7, I began to feel very unsatisfied with my life. I can remember going to bed and praying every night that I would wake up a girl. I couldn't understand why I couldn't be what I felt I should be.
I think when I was being ignored in how I thought I should feel, it was like, that's just the way it is. And everybody feels this way, and you get over it. And in the family that I was raised, we kind of did that. There wasn't a lot of affection or open talking about how you felt. And as a result, I just assumed that everybody was this way. And it wasn't until later in my life that I understood that I was unique in this situation, or not unique, but certainly in a lower number of people that felt the way I did. Later in my life, I finally figured out why I had those feelings.
I mean, I can remember trying to wear my mother's clothes, but everything had to be perfect, so there was no way I could get away with that. I got immediately caught and shamed quite strongly about that. Then I discovered my sister's dress-up clothes, which is my mom's old lingerie, and that was in a box, just dumped in the box in the garage, so I could play with that. And as a matter of fact, my best friend was a girl 2 doors down, and I made up this game, Truth or Consequences, which I always lost, and she always made me wear those nightgowns and slips, and it was so terrible, but that's what I had to do.
Oh my God, you were so lucky. I wound up with a brother and myself, and my mother was pretty much a tomboy. My aunt was a tomboy. And there weren't a lot of girl role models other than, you know, the kids down the street. And I never played with the kids down the street. I would dress up in my mom's clothes when she would leave. She would drive off to go to the store, go shopping, or what have you. And I could hear her car leave and knew that it was safe. I'd run into her bedroom and take out the clothes, put them on, walk around, really enjoy the feeling. And then as soon as I'd hear that car coming back up the hill towards the driveway, it was quick, take them off. I remember exactly how they were in the drawer, so she'd have no idea, I think, that I had had them on.
After the couple of years when the box disappeared, so did my dreams. As the eldest, I had to take the trash out so I could snitch my dad's Playboys and dream of being the centerfold someday?
Certainly through junior high school and high school, I was into sports and had decided that since I was a boy, then the object of this game was to be the biggest, strongest boy that you could be. I found these guys that I patterned myself after, assuming that this is what I was going to be doing the rest of my life. That worked for a little while, and I got really good at baseball, and I became this huge, muscular person. And I just assumed that that was the normal deal. When it came time for dating in high school and stuff, I didn't have those feelings for girls like they did. And I started feeling alienated from them.
Yeah, I can remember asking the girl that I had a crush on. Sometimes I would go over to her house to see her and end up babysitting her one-year-old brother because I love kids, and they would sort of point them at me, and I would take over without anybody ever saying anything. But I can remember the first time I asked her out, and she brought her girlfriend along. So, of course, that wasn't much of a date. At, 10 or 11, that's about the best it could be. But that stayed the same all through high school. I had girls who were friends. And then in college, again, I had girls who were friends. And they'd say, oh, come pick me up. I want to go down to the library because I want to see Tom. And if you leave me down there without a ride, he can give me a ride home and I'll get to talk to him. So I was the girlfriend's girlfriend instead of the boyfriend.
Yeah, like a confidant or a sister even.
Very much so.
I had girls that were friends in high school, but the group of friends I ran with were all social misfits because I considered myself a social misfit. I didn't understand the feeling of why my actions didn't correspond to the other boys, even though I resembled one. I fought with that for a long time. I didn't date in high school, remained a virgin long, after high school. I was not happy with my body, and I didn't know how to change it or if I ever would. And I thought maybe this was the way I'd end up.
My first date was like 2 weeks after I graduated from high school. Again, I didn't know how to act the boy, and so the whole thing was very awkward because she was very nice and very sweet. And I've seen her since, and she says, oh, now I understand. I was lost, and at this period in my life, pretty much through college, I just repressed everything because of all the shame and the guilt over it.
Yeah, I apparently did a pretty good job of faking being a boy. I guess I'm a good study.
I won't forget when Peter Pan came to my house, took my hand. I said I was a boy, I'm glad he didn't check. I learned to fly, I learned to fight. I lived a whole life in one night. We saved each other's lives out on the pirate deck. And I remember that night when leaving a late night with some friends, and I hear somebody tell me it's not safe, someone should help me. I need to find a nice man to walk me home. When I was a boy, scared the pants off of my mom, climbed what I could climb up on. And I don't know how I survived. I guess I knew the tricks that all boys knew. And you can walk me home. But I was a boy too. That you would like, just a small boy on her bike, riding topless, yeah, I never cared who saw. My neighbor came outside to say, get your shirt, I said, no way, it's the last time, I am not breaking any law. And now I'm in this clothing store, and the signs say less is more. More that's tight means more to see. More for them, not more for me. That can't help me climb a tree 10 seconds flat. When I was a boy, see that picture, that was me. Grass-stained shirt and dusty knees. And I know things I gotta change. They got pills to sell, they got implants to put in, they got implants to remove. But I am not forgetting that I was a boy too. when I'm tired, except when I'm being cut off guarded. I've had a lonesome, awful day. The conversation finds its way to catching fireflies out in the backyard. And so I tell the man I'm weak about the other life I live. And I say, now you're Top Gun, I have lost and you have won. And he says, oh no, no, can't you see? When I was a girl, my mom and I, we always talked. And I picked flowers everywhere that I walked. And I could always cry. Now even when I'm alone, I seldom do. And I have lost some kindness, but I was a girl too, and you were just like me, and I was just like you.
Welcome back to Outbeat Radio on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. I'm Jeff Basham, your host. That was Dar Williams singing When I Was a Boy from her CD called The Honesty Room. If you're just joining us, we are listening to a conversation between two transgender women discussing their lives. We rejoined Vanessa and Jackie discussing life after high school.
After I moved out of the house, that began a lot of years of going out shopping, buying a wardrobe, wearing it around the house, then feeling guilty, packing everything up and throwing it away or giving it to Goodwill, and then trying to go without for a while, growing a beard or anything to make it more difficult for me to cross-dress because I felt guilty, and then eventually breaking down and repeating the pattern.
I guess I repressed it far enough that when I grew a beard, I kept it for a long time. It kept all of the girl stuff buried within. And the only thing that I noticed that was empathic in me, I suppose, or at least more womanlike, was my love for animals. I had this unbelievable love for all animals and wouldn't hurt a thing. And it was so funny to have this huge guy that could be, you know, Mr. Hunter Man, and yet to not want to hurt a fly. It was so counterintuitive to what I looked like. I had found out on the internet that there were people like me. That awoke me, and that was until I was 42 years old.
I was in my late 40s when I discovered the transgender community online. What was interesting was that I felt uncomfortable because I still identified as a crossdresser because I had so much shame and guilt over it that I couldn't conceive of being transsexual. So what ended up happening is I had as many gay friends as I had trans friends. But that also meant that they accepted me and used nothing but female pronouns with me, which was very important for my peace of mind during that period.
It's very soothing and reassuring because then it's almost like, wow, I am accepted for who I am, and it's okay to be who I am. The internet comes up and you see transsexual people, and the majority of them are escorts. So my logic was the only way I'm going to find out why I am strangely attracted to this on the internet is to meet them. I was doing a lot of soul searching. I didn't know if I was attracted to them because it was a sexual thing, if I attracted with them because I wanted to be them. So I met with a few of them and ended up, instead of doing what you would normally do, I would talk to them for that time, rent them, if you will, rent their minds. I actually went through five or six that way and found out that our journeys and paths were very similar. The exact steps we may have taken were different, but yet how we wind up where we are is very similar.
The online community that I found, there was a strict hierarchy, and the good people were post-op transsexuals, the okay people were pre-op transsexuals, and then the cross-dressers and others were considered not quite so good people. If you met someone and you made a good impression, well, they said, you're not a crossdresser. You're a transsexual. You'll figure it out eventually. Which, of course, for me, made me resist it because I wasn't going to let anybody else tell me what I was going to be. I wasn't going to be anything because of social pressure. And so I ended up resisting transition for a few more years.
My final decision point was where I had met a couple of girls in San Diego, and it was before I was going on a vacation with my family. I had met them at a restaurant, oddly enough. I invited them to go to the zoo with me the next day. I spent the whole day questioning them, and I hadn't told them about my desires yet, other than just, you know, a little here and there. So we went to dinner that night, and I let them know that they're the two women that are responsible for me making this decision. And they were like, wow, I had no idea you even had these feelings. And that I mark in my book is the night that I decided that I was going to really give this an honest try and see if it was who I was.
I had been living alone for about 10 years after my second divorce, and I had really climbed into a hole and pulled the hole down over the top of me, and I was hiding and got very depressed and realized that I'd spent a large portion of my life in between relationships feeling very depressed and isolated. So I decided that rather than face thoughts of suicide, maybe if I took the risk of possibly losing job and home and family, I could transition, because that certainly would be better than being dead and not transitioning.
Absolutely. My initial try at being a woman was going out in public and starting maybe dressing androgynously, or at least not fully male, and weaving that into eventually girl's jeans and a blouse and breast forms and a wig. It was some scary stuff those first few times. I knew that everybody knew that I was a person walking down the mall who had a sort of female appearance with a male anatomical body underneath. And it wasn't until later that I started developing confidence. And that is the difference. It's not all about the makeup and the clothes you wear. It's the confidence you have when you're you.
Yeah, I can remember when I first started going out to support groups dressed as a woman. It was in Walnut Creek and Sacramento and into San Francisco. And I couldn't imagine doing it anywhere near where I lived. One of the first hints I got was when my car broke down going through the tunnel in Oakland. And I had to hire a cab.
Uh-oh.
Because BART had closed down and there was no way to get home for work at 6 o'clock the next morning. So I had to hire a cab from Oakland all the way to Santa Rosa. And he didn't care. I was paying him $100 to get home.
Fair.
He could care less.
Initially, when I was going out in public, my wife was having a great difficulty with me leaving the house dressed as a woman, because what would the neighbors say? And what would the neighbors think of her? Because, oh my God, is she a lesbian then? And then finally I said, this is so stupid. I'm driving down the freeway, taking this wig off and wiping makeup off my face so that my neighbor doesn't see me drive down the street. And yet for 18 hours a day, here I'm in the house in woman's clothes and being a girl. So what's the difference? And I just finally told her, I said, no, I'm walking out of the house as a woman and I'm coming back as a woman because now I am a woman.
I can remember when I first went out dressed as a woman, I would wait until dark. I mean, that's the famous thing in support groups for trans women, is they're always more in the winter months when they can leave home in the dark. And so there's less chance of people seeing them. And I thought I was really good, and nobody, you know, I'd stand at the kitchen window and look and make sure there was nobody out in the yard when I left. And then one morning, the next door neighbor says, oh, here, you dropped this earring last night when you came home. Oh, thank you. She knew, and she didn't care. But we all tend to worry about what other people think of us, and that's not a way you can live your life.
No, it isn't. When I told my neighbors, after I had been doing it for about 3 weeks, I finally said, you know, I'm going to go over and tell her. And my wife says, oh, no, you're not. And I said, oh, yes, I am, because what's the difference? I remember walking across the street, and she was out with one of her dogs. And as I walked, I said, I need to tell you something. And she said, I know, give me a hug.
Wow.
So that was cool.
I can remember telling my landlord, I said, okay, I'm transitioning. And, you know, I understand that some people have trouble with this. And they looked at me like, who? They couldn't figure out why anyone could possibly have any trouble with somebody transitioning. You paid your rent on time. You take care of the place. What's the big deal?
If you tell a man what you're doing or what you've done, they immediately put their hands between their legs and look at you like you're insane and you're hurting them. It can be an odd experience to some people.
A friend of mine loves to, when people start asking too many questions, she loves to go graphically through the procedure of surgery and all of the things that the doctor has to do.
I had been going out dressing now for about 5 months and gotten to the point where I was really comfortable being Vanessa. And it was at this point that I thought it was worthwhile giving hormones a try to really see if it would unlock something in me to signal me, because I'd heard from other people that once you're on the hormones, you're either going to know if it's right for you or wrong for you. And when I started them, within 2 to 3 weeks, I knew it was right for me.
Well, it's interesting because I heard different stories from different people about it. Some people I knew used their girlfriend's birth control pills to get estrogen. Other people sent away in the mail. So I sent away in the mail. All my friends that I talked to said, don't self-administer without someone to monitor. So they convinced me to go to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, you're approaching 50. You should not take oral. You need to inject. And for me, that was proof that I was doing the right thing, because the last thing in the world I wanted to do was stick a needle inside myself.
Oh, God, yeah.
And yet I did it. I did it for a couple of years until I got married and found somebody who could do it for me, so I don't have to do it anymore. But that was just one more proof that I was doing the right thing.
Yeah, I also started by self-administering when I had met a couple of these other trans women. They had told me what dosages they were taking, so I found a way on the internet to get them without prescription, and I actually was taking them for about 3 months. I met a couple of girls that said, you really shouldn't do that. And so I went ahead and started at the clinic in San Francisco at Lion Martin's Women's Health Clinic. And they monitor my blood levels and my kidney functions and everything to this day. I was very fortunate that I didn't hurt myself by taking the drugs without supervision. And I don't recommend it to anybody. But the things I noticed going on estrogen and having the testosterone blocked, first thing was I used to cry at sad movies. Now I cry at sad radio ads. I don't even need the images. I can read something and cry, but I love it. I think it is one of the things that makes me a woman, because the empathy that now comes out of this body is awesome. I feel so good that I can just emote without having to hide it and feel ashamed of it.
I think that's a pretty common experience, because I feel the same way. My wife teases me a lot when I cry at tearjerker movies and Hallmark commercials and things like that, but it feels so wonderful to do that. The first year that I was on hormones, I lost a lot of weight, and it was because all of a sudden I had peace of mind. I didn't need that feeling of giving myself pleasure by eating. I didn't eat when I was bored because I wasn't bored. I was always happy. And it was the most amazing transformation that I ever could have imagined.
One of the other things I noticed is I had always been a semi-short-tempered person and very aggressive in my having to dominate everything. And as I was on these hormones longer, that all went away. That having to follow people close on the freeway and be first in line, all those things went away. I'm still competitive when I ride my bike, something like that, but the rest of it, I just kick back now and enjoy. It's not a race anymore. It all just got let go.
I had to help a friend move after about 3 or 4 months of being on estrogen and testosterone blockers. And she's disabled, so I was carrying everything, the boxes, the furniture, musical instruments, hymn books, which are quite heavy when you box them up. And so finally I said, okay, I'm going to take my shirt off. And she looked at my chest, looked at my breasts, and said, you might not want to do that anymore. And I looked down, and yeah, there they were. They were budding. And needless to say, I've helped her move twice since then. I don't take my shirt off anymore.
I remember after about maybe 4 months on estrogen, I made the mistake of running someplace. I had had large pectoral muscles to start with, and then it had slowly turned into breasts now. But that run, that hurt. That was an eye-opener that, Vanessa, it's bra time from now on.
What's funny is everybody warned me, you're going to catch your breast in something. And I said, no, I'm not going to. Well, there was an accordion door to a closet in the hallway, and I went to get something, and I pinched my nipple in the accordion door.
How neat it was to be able to lay in bed on your side and see them.
Yes.
It was like, oh, my God, I have breasts now. And for me, it was absolutely wonderful to start resembling a woman. The only thing that I didn't like about all of this was losing strength, where I really noticed it, especially a little bit later on, maybe a year and a half down the road. In my former occupation, I needed to be a strong person. And it was slowly becoming evident to me that I was losing about 40% of my strength, and I would have to definitely grunt harder to do things.
It was very clear to me that I had to pay attention to mechanical advantage rather than strength to lift things.
Now that my breasts were developing, I had this chance to walk in front of the mirror in the bathroom, and I remember turning side to side and looking and realizing that for the first time, my body was starting to resemble that person that I had dreamed was in there all this time.
She is the restless river running through my veins. She rides without the reins. Her name's Juanita. She lives in the heart of every woman in the world, within the reach of every girl who wants to meet her.
She's gonna be a
her name's Juanita.
She's gonna be a ride.
She's riding.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. On the web at afamd.com. You're listening to KRCB Santa Rosa.
Welcome back to Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM. I'm Jeff Basham, your host. That was Shania Twain singing Juanita from her CD called Up. We now rejoin Vanessa and Jackie discussing coming out, work life, and the first big steps on their journey to transition.
Now that I was living all of my time outside and inside the house as a woman, there was one little problem. my driver's license still had this very burly-looking manly dude on it, and I didn't resemble that at all anymore. My solution for that was to go down and get a California ID with my old name, but yet with what I looked like now. And that got me through for a while. But the big step was coming, and that was to legally change my name to Vanessa, and I had to come out to my parents, and by changing my name, I was going to have to come out at work.
I waited I started transition with hormones, electrolysis, and therapy in May of 2003. I transitioned in March of 2004. While my appearance changed because I had electrolysis and was losing the beard and letting my hair grow longer, I was binding my chest. I bought very tight sports bras and put those on underneath my work shirt to keep my breasts compressed so that I still had a more masculine shape to my body when I went to work as my old self. Then I informed my boss that I would be transitioning. Things worked amazingly well once I got through all the details.
My story wasn't as well received. The part telling my parents went really well. When I went down to see them, I explained what I was doing and why I was doing it. My mother was disappointed and visibly upset that she was losing a son that she had known for so long. My father, on the other hand, looked at me and he said, "Well, honestly, I thought you could have gone either way. Is it possible for you to do both?" And that was when I told him the problem I was having, and that was living as a woman everywhere but at work. And like you were talking about the breast development, mine was coming along very nicely, and it was starting to get obvious that something was going on. Plus, I was waxing my eyebrows. I had had my ears pierced. I was wearing stud earrings at work. And they just thought I was a pretty eccentric guy, I guess. So the day came. I picked a day to change my name. And I picked November 20th as the date to file for the legal name change, which has a significance to us transgender people. It is the Transgender Day of Remembrance, when we recall the names of the people that have died the previous year as a result of either hatred, fear, prejudice, or inability to operate in society. I thought that was a great moment for me to start my life. I filed for the name change on November 20th. I told work on November 21st. I had all the members come into the office and sat down and explained to them what I had been doing for the past 2 years and what I had intended to do to transition to a woman full time. The one thing I remember my boss saying was, "There's no way you can work here as a woman." And that brought on 3 months of not very happy times at work. And eventually I realized that, no, I can't work there as a woman because they won't accept me and I can't work there as a man anymore. So I separated from the company 4 months later.
I found it tough only because people didn't understand what was going on. My boss said, "Well, okay, you can transition at work as soon as you have surgery." And I had to explain to him it doesn't work that way because you can't get surgery until you've transitioned and lived for a year in the gender towards which you're moving. So once he understood that, it was fine. When there's a large corporation like the post office, unless there's a policy, people get lost. And no one had set up policies and procedures. So I had to explain it to my boss. I had to explain it to his boss. Once they understood what the rules were and the fact that I had the advantage that I had gotten good advice, that I went and had a legal change of name and gender, that they understood. That was really clear, black and white, on a piece of paper. They didn't know what the rules were, but since it's in black and white, they can accept it. And they can push that piece of paper up in case they get any questions. My mother was a little different. My mother just turned 90, and a tad on the conservative side, I think, would be the best way to explain it. She's had many a talk with her Catholic confessor over how to deal with me and what's right and what's wrong. The only thing I can say is that she says she still loves me. She's shown that she still loves me and she wants me there. The only difficulty I've had was the normal confusion that people get when I say I transitioned and then I married a woman. That totally confuses people because they don't get that gender is different than sexuality.
Right. I get the same thing. They say, "So you're attracted to women, you're dating women, why did you become a woman?" And they don't get that. Whether you feel like you're a woman or a man or whatever you feel like you're like, that has nothing to do with what you're attracted. And a lot of times, even after you transition, you're still attracted to whatever you were before. Doing the one doesn't affect the other. I knew that when I left work that this was the point where I could really do everything I needed to do to make myself happy. And the next step for me was now to go into electrolysis. And I'm sure you have stories. I have stories. It's ironic that the two of us went and had the same lady do our electrolysis, Amelia James. She is a sweetheart. And if anybody is ever questioning who to go to for electrolysis, I would highly recommend her.
That and the shots were the two things to me that I never thought I would be able to deal with. And both of those, for me, were markers that, yes, I know I'm doing the right thing because I can deal with these things. Yeah.
And it's what you want at the end. One of the funniest electrolysis episodes for me, I had taken some time off, so I had a lot more growth on my upper lip. In fact, it almost kind of looked like I was a woman with a mustache. I went into Amelia, and normally we would have 2 to 3 hour sessions. And in that 2 hour session, she was able to clear half of my upper lip. That was on a Friday. My next appointment was on Tuesday. So for the weekend, when I went to the store to go shopping, I was a large-breasted woman with half a mustache. And people would look at me, and I look back at them like, yeah, so I'm a woman with half a mustache. What's the deal? Just ask me. I dare you. Ask me. And that confidence, I was just like, oh, my God, I'm here. I've done it. I found the confidence. I'm the woman.
I've always been the kind of girl that hid my face. So afraid to tell the world what I've got to say. But I had this dream right inside of me. I'm gonna let it show. It's time to let you know. And to let you know. This is real. This is me. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be now. Gonna let the light shine on me. Now I found who I am. There's no way to hold it in. No more hiding who I wanna be. This is me. Do you know what it's like to feel so in the dark? To dream about a life where you're the shining star. Even though it seems like it's too far away, I have to believe in myself. It's the only way. This is real, this is me. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be now. Gonna let the light shine.
Welcome back to Outbeat Radio on KRCB. I'm Jeff Basham, your host. That was the song This Is Me from the Camp Rock soundtrack released by Disney Records. We'll return now to Vanessa and Jackie discussing their final step in completing transition, sexual reassignment surgery.
The experience of going to Montreal to see Dr. Brizard was amazing. One of the things that you have to do beforehand is get an EKG, which checks your heart, some blood tests for different levels for different things. So I'm there on the gurney the morning of my surgery, and the surgeon and the anesthetist come in and say, there's a blip on your EKG that we think might be indicative that you've had a heart attack. Do you really think you want to go through with this surgery? We suggest that you go home and talk to a cardiologist. So luckily, I was in a very calm and collected place at that point, my wife having provided me with a meditation dealing with surgery and preparing and calming yourself beforehand. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I could just let go of everything and say, okay, I couldn't get the test from the hospital until the cardiologist looked at it. I couldn't get the doctor to send it to my surgeon until he looked at it. If they both had to look it over strong enough before they would forward it, then they both think it's okay.
Yeah,
I might as well go through with it.
Yeah. I remember when I got to Montreal, and it still seemed almost surreal. Like, yeah, I know the surgery's going to take place in 4 more days, but it was still a dream. And I remember going up to my room in the residence, and my dilators had arrived, and they were wrapped in a leather pouch with my name on it. And I took them out and unfolded it, and it was like, this is going to happen. Those are mine, and I'm getting this. And it was one of those moments where I just sat, cried for a little while, and then went down and said, yippee, look what I got. When I went into surgery that morning, I was the calmest person in the world because I knew that this was a decision for me. And if I didn't make it through the surgery, I was okay with that because I was there and this was my course and this is where I was headed. And I knew that everything was going to be okay. And it turned out all right.
I was actually quite amazed. I'd never had surgery before. I was astounded at the impact on my body and just so thankful for the way Dr. Prasad had set up the residence right next door to the surgical office so that while in the surgical building there was 24-hour nursing, and even when you get back to the residence, there's 24-hour nursing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, any issue that came up, I could talk to somebody who knew what was going on and they could reassure me that it's no big deal, relax. A lot of people go through that.
The one thing that I really was glad I made the decision to go to Montreal with Dr. Brassard was the residents, because there are 7 other people that are going through the same thing that you have, that you're healing with, and so you are a big support structure for each other. And you make bonds with those women that will never be broken again because you share something in common to the bone.
I was just amazed at the impacts on me, and there was just so much to deal with at first in terms of all the medications, paying attention to emptying your bag and keeping yourself clean, washing your hands every time you touch anything.
And that's the whole thing, is your room is your room, and you have to be sterile everywhere else. And anytime you go to the bathroom, they have the hand cleaner there, and it's just this rigorous steps, because that's the one thing that could hurt us the most is infection, because we're open and we're raw.
This is Casey, and I'm Jackie's wife. Vanessa, when you were talking about open and raw and whatnot, I went with Jackie to Montreal, and I was also allowed to stay in the residence. And I was there with her, stayed at the hospital. The day Jackie got her dressings removed, she was so excited and so pleased with herself and so proud. She called me into her room, and she had the paper drape over her groin area. She said, "Do you want to see?" And was so excited. And I said, "Yeah, sure." I was a little tentative because I was trained medical at one point, and I knew that this was going to be difficult. She drew back the paper drape, and all I could see was the rawness and the bruising. She was bruised from her navel down onto her upper thighs, just purple, angry, angry bruising, and everything was raw and open. I knew she was so proud of this, and it was everything I can do not to run out of the room. I turned my back. I just sobbed, and I felt so bad for doing that because I know she felt so good about the surgery. For 3 days, I'd seen her tentatively walking around and on her knees at the table, on the chair, rather than sitting down. And, you know, the inflatable donut to sit on, which you do that for a minute, and then you stand on your knees. And so I knew in many different ways how raw and painful and awful that was, and then to actually see that, and I couldn't do anything to help, and I was helpless, and she was hurting, and it was probably one of the most awful feelings I ever had, at the same time feeling so happy for her for being happy, and really conflicting emotions for me.
I can assure you, and I'm sure Jackie can too, that it wouldn't have mattered to have that, to look in the mirror and to see how your body has been modified and now you are that woman. I would give up anything again if there was even a question. I feel so good and so positive about who I've become that it was worth it.
I was afraid for you falling apart because I could see the impact on you. And so there was this feeling of me, like, how can I help you? And of course, I couldn't do anything either. That's part of what being married's about, is you gotta be there for each other even when you can't do anything.
Once again, this is Jeff Basham. We're almost out of time for this special edition of Outbeat Radio. But I asked both Vanessa and Jackie to search their journals for something special that they wanted to share. They both had done nothing but amaze me over and over with their honesty and openness while we were recording, and these pieces were the icing on the cake.
My transition came with a price. My marriage is over. My choice, not hers. I lost my career of 21 years, My 401k plan has been evaporated. I have no health insurance. I will more than likely lose the house and have to file for bankruptcy. But if I had to do it all over again, I would, because now I am honestly the happiest woman in the world. And if there's anything that I've learned through all of this, to find happiness, true happiness, you must first be accepting of your true self. Once you have come to terms with who you are, make the changes necessary to start liking yourself. The rest of life just seems easier and a lot more fun, regardless of money, social circumstances, or anything.
Where do you go when your lifelong dream comes true? Does this change who I am? What goals are still within my grasp? How do I reconcile my past with my present or with my future? How do I be me without denying my past and yet without proclaiming it? I see an inkling of a vast, bright horizon dawning. I feel the warm hug of hope reborn. I am joy incarnate.
Welcome back into the studio at KRCB. I'm Jeff Basham, and I'm in studio with Vanessa Argerbright and Jackie Nugent. Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing such insight into your lives. The original recording of the conversation was such a wonderful experience earlier this month, but hearing it again tonight seems even more powerful. It's been so moving to hear you talk about your transition in such open, vivid, and sometimes emotional speech.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it. If there was one thing that I would say is thank you to everyone for listening to this and taking the time to care. I know that if I were to say anything, would be please to tell everybody what you heard tonight, because there is one thing that can really help us and make other people's lives easier, and that is to get away from the fear of what a transgender person is and to understand that we're just people trying to survive, and we need understanding.
I can hear the emotion in your voice, Vanessa, and I'm sure the radio audience can also. It can definitely be hard for any of us that are members of the GLBT community to ask for understanding and acceptance and forgiveness and ask people just to accept us as people. I'd like to allow you and Jackie to thank anyone who has helped you on your journey on the air as a way to say thank you and a way to acknowledge the help and support that you've received. So, Jackie, why don't you go first?
Well, for me, Ann and Diane Giles were, for a long time in Sonoma County, the people who ran the transgender support group that was very important for me in finding my path and finding local resources that helped me transition, including Amelia James that we talked about earlier, the electrologist, and Dr. Terry Turner in Sebastopol. Both of them were very important in my transition. And thank you, Jeff, for this chance to thank these people and to tell my story. And also thanks to Colin Close and Nami, who have helped Vanessa and I to be facilitators for a local transgender support group called Transgender North Bay, where we can turn around and help other people to deal with the issues that we've already dealt with.
And Vanessa?
Yes, in addition to Amelia, as we talked about earlier, there were a few people that really helped me along this journey. Sarah Mallon Rudman down at Lion Martin Health, Women's Health Services in San Francisco, was instrumental in keeping me balanced. My therapist, I must thank my therapist tremendously. Jan Ogren, she gave me the tools to get through work those last few months without doing something stupid. And probably all of my friends that were already transitioned, that were my support social circle that had gone through it before me. You know, they all deserve recognition. My friend Lisa Doomer, my friend River Mortensen, were two very, very special friends. And Transgender San Francisco, they were the first group that I was open to, and they accepted me in with open arms and helped me tremendously. And I owe them all a great thanks.
All of them are extremely wonderful people, I'm sure. Well, now both of you have mentioned your transgender support group, Transgender North Bay. If someone wants to get in contact with Transgender North Bay or wants to attend one of your meetings, how do they get information about doing so?
The easiest thing to do is come to one of the meetings, actually. They're held at Positive Images in Santa Rosa, which is at 312 Chin Street, I believe, and it's C-H-I-N-N. It's between College and 4th Street, just a block east of Brookwood. And we meet the second and fourth Tuesdays around 6 o'clock, 6:30. And the evening, the format is a support group predominantly for male-to-female trans-identified people. And the support group is on the second Tuesday. And then on the fourth Tuesday, we have a social get-together where the members and then their family members or friends or supporters of our community are welcome to come along, and we all have a great social together. And the best thing is just to show up. We are very accepting. You don't even have to show up as a woman if you're uncomfortable with that. We are very open-armed, and we're here to help.
Are there any age limits for this group?
About 17 up to infinity, actually.
That's great. You've been listening to a very special edition of Outbeat Radio with our guests Vanessa Argerbright and Jacqueline Regina Nugent. Next week on Outbeat Radio, join Living Proof hosts Sheridan and Diana as they speak to Sheridan's old friend Roger from second grade. Hear what it was like to discover he was gay after being married and having kids, dealing with homophobia in his family, and how Roger and his husband have made a life together. That's next week at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB. Thank you for spending your time with me, and until next time, this is Jeff Basham. Good night. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. On the web at afamd.com. This special edition of Outbeat Radio was produced, hosted, and engineered by Jeff Basham. If you'd like to contact Jeff, please visit the KRCB website at www.krcb.org.